Surprisingly cool as well, particularly along a North Sea coast, just 10 or 11 degrees. Move inland and it's more like 14 or 15. One or two showers around on Thursday, but by Friday, for England and Wales in particular, much drier, brighter and warmer.
Jay, thanks very much indeed. Jay Wynn with the weather. Well, now our book of the week. In the North and almost everything in it, music journalist Paul Morley continues his journey north, looking at what being a northerner means for him. Continuing his mix of memoir, history and popular culture with echoes of voices from his past, today Morley looks at the darker side of growing up in the North, with additional readings by Paul Hilton.
White chalk, written on red brick, our love, told in a heart.
Despite my home being North Reddish and close enough to danger or existential grit or blazing, smoking, consuming industrial history to satisfy extremely picky local historian Morrissey, at the corner of my street stood the relatively imposing Reddish Conservative Club. It was an ugly, misshapen brick building featuring a tangle of pseudo-turrets, stern arches and fussy windows, surrounded by a rutted, stony car park, the big gates of which were goalposts for scrappy street football between local kids. For me, approaching 10 years old, it was part of a world of play and adventure, with the inevitable sweet shop just a few steps from my house. Its shadowy, taciturn owners, who were on the dark side of Dahl, even a whiter shade of Poe, was slowly drawn from the dark back of the shop by the bell that tolled as you pushed open the door. In the nearby grocer's there was wanly pink boiled ham, sliced so thinly you could see right through it, and even thinner slices of corned beef that instantly disintegrated once they were unwrapped. Other meat regularly served in our house included glum liver, the consistency of decay, and occasional shriveled joints of beef, the texture of polyester, from cows seemingly killed centuries before. The memory of cheap slithery margarine the colour of pus, roughly spread on woolly slices of pallid white bread, still makes my tongue beg for mercy.
Wilfred Pickles became the first national newsreader with a pronounced northern accent in December 1941, signing off each night with a hearty good night. His appointment was a ploy by Minister of Information Brendan Bracken to foil Nazi propagandists who had become skilled at imitating BBC Oxford English.
I don't remember my dad making anything other than a pot of tea and eccentrically spreading marge on his Weetabix. But it was on our annual holiday with his mother by the sea in Margate where we ate our most formal family meals. A small, austere, semi-detached house, unmodernised since the war, 2 miles from the seafront, smelled ripe and sour at the same time. A blend of boiled sweets and dismay. We would solemnly eat together at a table complete with fancy tasselled chenille tablecloth and ominously laid out worryingly polished knives, forks and spoons with well-used handles the colour of glue.
When I'm cleaning windows, undoubtedly George Formby's most popular song, featured in his 1937 film Keep Your Seats, Please, and was banned by the BBC because of its content. Of the 12 verses in the two versions, 9 contain sexual references as follows. The sexual activities of newlyweds, 3 verses. Women undressing, 2. Naked women, 2. Frustrated old maid, 1. His large penis, 1.
Pajamas lying side by side, ladies' nighties I have spied. I've often seen what goes inside when I'm cleaning windows.
Back home after a fortnight in Margate, Reddish always took some getting used to. Everything seemed darker, smaller, dirtier, sadder, colder and lardier, with houses pressed into the ground, not watching the skies. Dashing sea air was replaced by stale air.
W.H. Auden's mind was irresistibly drawn towards the North. In a 1947 article entitled I Like It Cold, he wrote, "Years before I ever went there, the North of England was the never-never land of my dreams. North. Cold. Wind, precipices, glaciers, caves, heroic conquest of dangerous obstacles, whales, hot meat and vegetables, concentration and production, privacy. South, heat, light, drought, calm, agricultural plains, trees, Rotarian crowds, the life of ignoble ease, spiders, fruits and desserts, the waste of time, publicity.
The North was right up my street, in my next-door neighbour, Mrs. Wilson. On her own, wrinkled, pointed and bent like a storybook witch, stubbornly resisting the modern world and kids with their comics, TV and sweets, getting in her way, clearly planning a world that would require more and more electricity, more and more frivolous comforts, and more television, which ruined everything, all her past, which she had saved up like a miser, and was all she had. She would have worked at a mill and knew all about the great noise of the girls' wooden clogs sparking on the cobbled streets as they all left for home at the end of a hard working day.
Gracie Fields, rich, successful and famous, told Film Pictorial, "I ought to feel right at home by rights, because here I am back in the mill again, right where I started. I have to get up at 6 o'clock, only instead of knocking off at 5 as I did in Rochdale, I work till 8. And instead of cotton fluff, it's incandescent carbons and dust and grease paint. And instead of a shilling a week, it was £2 a minute. Or so they tell me."
On the other side, a couple, Mr. and Mrs. Brown, Christian names kept well away from me. Elderly, less forbidding, but still bringing with them in shadowy form what I was slow to realise consisted of such things as the Second World War, Victorian hymns, Edwardian pride, and an idealised view of a northern atmosphere that Lowry would turn into a smoky, broken, tragicomic vision of brick togetherness and isolated souls crowding around each other on flat, forlorn and framed streets. Streets which contained great truth, fabricated memory and a riveting myth that draped a golden haze over the rancid, immutable business of poverty. The houses on our side of the street each had a basic back garden about 20 feet by 10, which ended with an uneven, charred brick wall tipped with scraggly barbed wire. Our garden had a homemade-looking air raid shelter. I climbed on top of it now and then, reaching a brave new height even above the crooked tree, and sat there, surveying the whole world as far as I could see, mostly the placid backs of houses, which suggested to me that without brick, there would be nothing in the world, and nowhere for people to go. Because bricks were Lowry's bread and butter, because for him they were the pillars of beauty, the beginning and end of decency, he was in the right place at the right time to paint that part of the universe that was so bricked up and bricked in. It was a kind of primeval, time-worn cul-de-sac. My dad demolished the shelter in a sudden rush of something that might have been anger, tearing into this big block of the past with a monstrous hammer. And brick by broken brick, it was removed, leaving behind the stark slab of scarred, immovable concrete that had been its base. I would then use this as a penalty area for games of football, using a rusty metal single bed frame on its side as the goal. If my ball went over the wall at the back of the garden, I faced up to the terrors of the other side. Chunks of barbed wire, weed, shards of glass, brick dust, smeared sweet wrappers, and grimy pop bottles. This was a discarded North, outside the perversely glorifying frame of Lowry, and the other side of the immediate northern border to my existing personal territory.
At night, when you cannot see the hideous shapes of the houses and the blackness of everything, a town like Sheffield assumes a kind of sinister magnificence. Sometimes the drifts of smoke are rosy with sulphur and serrated flames like circular sores squeeze themselves out from beneath the cowls of the foundry chimneys. Through the open doors of foundries you see fiery serpents of iron being hauled to and fro by red-lit boys. And you hear the whiz and thump of steam hammers and the scream of the iron under the blow. George Orwell, The Road to Wigan Pier.
I didn't think about it at the time, knowing only that I lived in Reddish, Stockport, Cheshire. But where I found myself was connected to a history of plans, systems and ambitions, highfalutin minds, dreamers and workers with a distinctive commitment to progress and change, entertainers happy to make things seem better than they were, comedians understanding how it all led to a certain sort of relieving, even inspiring punchline, and to the severe specialness of the landscape where they found themselves. A combination of people crammed together in villages that became towns, that became cities, that spilled out into towns and villages and empty open spaces.
Ted Hughes was born in 1930 at Mytholmroyd, a small town close to Hebden Bridge in Calder Valley, Yorkshire. He described the valley with its poisoned canals, unpredictable weather and decaying industrial landscape as his tuning fork, and the moors as a stage for the performance of heaven. As far as my writing is concerned, maybe the crucial thing was that I spent my first years in a valley in West Yorkshire, which was really a long street of industrial towns, textile mills, textile factories. These towns were surrounded by a very wide landscape of high moorland in contrast to that industry into which everybody disappeared every day. They just vanished. If you weren't at school, you were alone in an empty wilderness.
Once you had passed through Reddish, you were in areas dominated by the lingering presence and foul moods of Ian Brady and Myra Hindley, born in Crumpsall in 1942. The diabolical life's work stuck to your soul, especially once you had seen their stunning police photographs, in which two defiant, haunting faces stared straight at you, sizing you up, bringing steaming news of terror from just damp yards around the corner, near the chip shop, by the garage where your dad once went to buy a pale blue second-hand Triumph Herald, a little potential flash of style and difference on the mundane streets, comfy with pragmatic Morris Minors, Minis and Cortinas, but which, in the end, he couldn't afford, not by a mile. Hindley and Brady, charred, trapped scraps of frustrated northern will, were some kind of warning to those who might think there must be more to what I am and where I am than this. Look what would happen if you thought about yourself too much and had ideas above your station, ideas that questioned the view that you were nothing special. I felt that I was surrounded by people who were staying where they were, busy but planted, essentially obedient. And I would join them because this was where I was, and therefore who I was. Little came into Reddish but the place itself, as maintained by its position, bricks and mortals under a sceptical sky, reflected in glazed puddles that never seemed to disappear even in the summer, which was always, year in, year out, doomed to end quickly. There was too a coldness and darkness, a heavy atmosphere in the house where I lived, that seemed to repel the very idea that you could change who you were and where you were, because something outside immensely anchored Reddish might make it through some unreal invisible opening and into the clear spaces inside your mind.
Over the moor, take me to the moor, dig a shallow grave and I'll lay me down over the moor. Take me to the
And Paul Morley continues reading from The North and Almost Everything in It at the same time tomorrow evening with additional voices from Paul Hilton. It was abridged by Viv Beebe and produced by Justine Willett.
Thank you.
And now the shipping forecast, issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 29th of May. There are warnings of gales in Plymouth, Biscay, Fitzroy, Sole, Lundy and Fastnet. The general synopsis at 1800, low southern England, 997, expected northeast Biscay, 1006 by 1800 Wednesday. New low expected north Germany, 999 by same time. Low Rockall, 1002, losing its identity. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Cira, south at Cira, 40s. Northerly or northeasterly, 4 or 5. Occasional rain or thundery showers. Fog patches, moderate or good, occasionally very poor. Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, Dogger. Northeast, backing north, 4 or 5, occasionally 6. Occasional rain, fog patches, good, becoming moderate, occasionally very poor.